Have you got some great songs but no one is listening? Are you struggling to find your audience? Worry no longer. Go to musiciansmap.org/free-book and download a copy of the free ebook, How to Get Your Music Heard. It talks about growing your fan base, finding your niche, and getting your music out there. The essential foundations you need and the steps to take to get your music heard. How to Get Your Music Heard. Get it now at musiciansmap.org/free-book.
And we were just as surprised. We had no idea. Then they were like, you guys went gold today and you're number one. And we're like, okay.
Welcome to the Musicians Map podcast. This week, my guest is Lani Perkis, who is best known as the bassist for New Zealand pop rock band LMNOP. For those of you who don't know, LMNOP burst onto the New Zealand music scene in 2003 with their first album Love and Disrespect, which debuted at number one, produced six singles, and went triple platinum. To New Zealanders at that time, it seemed like this band just came out of nowhere and immediately took over the whole country with ultra-catchy, deadpan, straightforward rock that was uniquely Kiwi. Their sound was so specific and so well executed that because they were on a major record label, there was even talk among the sour and uninformed of them being a quote-unquote manufactured group, which they obviously weren't, but the fact people even mentioned it serves to demonstrate just how successful they were. Love it or hate it, you couldn't avoid it, and you couldn't deny their charm. So 15 years on, it was my pleasure to pick Lani's brain about LMNOP and everything in between. Lani talks about the early years and formation of LMNOP, major labels, songwriting, royalty shares, and fame. We also discuss music as a career, scenes, and girls rock camp Aotearoa. We caught up over Skype.
I first got into music in high school when I was third form, which is year nine, I think. And I was in an all-girls band, but purely because we went to a girls' school, wasn't intentional. But I'm glad that I did that, looking back. And we were influenced by... we were mostly influenced by an older girl who just told us what to do. I'm really glad that she did, because otherwise nothing would have happened. But she just kind of was like, I wrote this song and it sounds like this and these are the chords and I'm going to yell and scream and this blah blah blah, and when we play you should wear this and you should wear that. And we were just like, okay. And she really molded our teenage years. So she was actually my biggest influence for a long time. And then she left school, and by that point we were really into like Hole, Babes in Toyland, L7, real grunge, proper grunge sort of stuff. And then a little bit more poppy stuff like Veruca Salt. I stayed with those same girls for quite a few years. And that became a band called Foamy Ed. Yeah. And we've never actually broken up, but we don't play anymore.
And you guys were punk, grunge?
Yeah, we started out as grunge. I'd say we started out just playing music. There was no genre. It was just like, this is how we can strum. Sure. This is how I can do this. These are the beats I know. And then we went to a punk show and we just never looked back. And we literally got our set and just made it the drums double time. And we just that's all we did, and that's how we became a punk band. And we just I just went from using my fingers to using a pick and just doing downstrokes like dung 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 dung. So the song used to just go dung 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 dung. Now it went dung 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 dung. You like that was all that was what we did. And Fleur just sang angrier.
Yeah. But you guys ended up playing some quite cool shows.
Yeah, we played heaps of cool shows. Often I'll be saying, oh, I've played with them, or I've played that blah, blah, blah. You know, I've played that venue, and people always assume it's LMNOP. You know, I'm like, oh, no, it was Foamy Ed. Like, I played more Big Day Outs with Foamy Ed, I think, than LMNOP. That's probably incorrect, but it felt like it.
Yeah.
And we opened the main stage quite a few times. So,
sure.
Yeah.
And so you guys just sort of kept going after high school and just kept improving. How long were you around for?
I guess we kind of stopped around 2005 or 2004 for no real reason. I guess LMNOP was taking up a lot of my time, and the rest of the girls, their careers were kind of taking off in different directions, and it just became less of a priority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about LMNOP? How did that come about, and how did you end up joining those guys?
I worked next door to Justin. He had a studio making jingles above the hair salon that I was working in. And he was really good friends with our receptionist. And so he'd always come in and say hello. So I met him like via her. And then they just needed a bass player to fill in, and she suggested me, blah, blah, blah. So it was only meant to be for a month because they had all these shows booked, but they had no bass player. And I just never left.
Sweet.
Because it was fun. Yeah, it was real fun.
I mean, you landed in the right spot as well, like so early on. I remember a lot about LMNOP. It was like you guys just sort of immediately exploded and were straight away like a massive band.
It surprised us. We had no idea it was going to happen like that. So I joined and the album was already written and recorded, except for like Verona and a couple of other songs. So I played on them. But no one had any idea it was going to be that big. Like our release party was going to be just at like a little venue, and then suddenly it was at the town hall, and there was 500 people that couldn't get in.
Oh my
God. And we were just as surprised. We had no idea.
Yeah.
Then they were like, "You guys went gold today, and you're number one." And we're like, okay, wow.
The album actually came out on Universal, so it was the debut album, and it was released by a major. Can you kind of shed some light on how that happened?
They were already signed when I joined. So it was a proper cassette tape demo that sat on the A&R guy's desk, and he just happened to play it. And he just happened to be one of those guys that played the demos that were sent in. It's like one of those stories that you don't really believe, because I've been into A&R offices and seen like really depressing piles of CDs. Like,
yeah. Yep.
Huge, like just piled up against their walls. Not anymore, no one would use a CD. And I'd just stare at it like, that is so sad, so much effort's gone into all that music. And they don't have time to listen to it, but luckily they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he signed LMNOP, and then he moved to Universal Australia like a month later. So
wow.
I never even met him. And then the new managing director just had to take us on board. So we were just the latest signing when he came on board, and he luckily loved us. So it all went well.
And there was a series of singles, right? Because not only did the album come out on Universal, it also came out at number one, as you said, after your release show.
Yeah.
So what can you maybe, talk a bit about the build up to the release?
Gosh, I can't really remember much. Maybe not. Like, I know that I wasn't in Fast Times in Tahoe and Nirvana videos. And then the third video, Every Day's a Saturday, I was in that. So we must have released three songs, and then probably released one on with the album, which was probably Verona, I imagine. But we ended up releasing like 7 or 8 singles off that album.
Yeah, it was so massive.
Yeah, it did so well. Yeah. We've started playing a lot of those songs as well, the ones that weren't singles.
Yeah.
Off that album, and the crowd know the whole album.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
It was 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, really crazy. So going back to that A&R guy that kind of just picked it up and listened to it and loved it and just sort of made all of this happen so quickly, do you think that possibly still happens, or is it just not even worth it to send in CDs and things?
I think you'd have a better chance nowadays just doing it yourself and trying to get noticed that way. I mean, they definitely still sign artists, but they're often, from my experience, licensed from somewhere else anyway. So someone's already kind of put in some hard work, and then the record company kind of just scoops them up once the work's done.
Yeah.
But then they must also be I don't know. I reckon it's a mystery right now. I don't reckon there's any rules and anybody really knows what's going on. I think everybody's just trying new things and crossing their fingers.
Yeah. How much involvement in writing the songs for the second and third records?
Did I have?
Yeah.
Next to none.
Oh, yeah?
Like, yeah. Gibbo and Justin, Dave and Justin, they've got something that happens that you can't really get in the middle of. So I can contribute with, I could help Gibbo with lyrics, but if it doesn't come from him, he really struggles to sing it as well. So you try, but it just doesn't, there was no point in trying to mess with it.
Sure, sure.
And yeah like Justin would let me write bass lines and stuff, but often he would go, hey, I wrote this bass line, let's write a song around it. That was also another scenario that would happen. And
yep.
I just, for some reason, didn't mind. I've been in bands where that I find it really annoying or I don't feel fulfilled. But I was like, I know my role. And
yeah.
They know what they're doing and it works. So
it really does absolutely work. Something that's really fascinating to me is the whole fame aspect of it. You've been playing in bands, well, in Foamy Ed, you know, for a few years. Then you join LMNOP, and then, you know, however long later, you're one of the kind of more well-known bands in the country. Was that sort of jump to fame a bit strange? And how is it sort of now?
I don't actually ever get recognised, or if I do, people don't say anything. So Scotty gets recognised constantly, and people will just come up to him all the time and they'll just ignore me. So I haven't had an issue with it at all. Recently I've actually encountered the biggest issues, and I've found that women especially don't like to talk to me. And then I'll find out later it's because they felt intimidated, or they were like, oh, I couldn't talk to you before because you were Lani from LMNOP.
Yeah.
And they're a lot younger than me. So I guess they probably were children when we were big. And so to them, I'm like this older woman who they think is really famous. I'm not. So that's actually, recently it's actually become more apparent.
Sure.
That I had some fame.
Yep.
For a little while. But I never really had any issues with it. Or noticed it. It wasn't ever a big deal in my life, like it would have been for Dave and Scotty.
When you were releasing your records and in the charts, was it a full-time job at that point?
Yes. It was enough for me to live off for about a decade.
Rad.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. And as far as like where the revenue came from, was what particular streams? Was it more touring or was it album sales?
Touring and syncing to ads, but mostly shows.
Yeah. Are you comfy talking about the split that you guys do?
If it's for a show, it's all equal.
Yep.
And when the band was together, when we're like, it's a weird one because we do get back together. But for APRA, for songwriting, they split it equally, even though we didn't write the songs.
Yep.
While the band was active, all income was split equally. And I've never encountered that with anyone else. Like, I've never heard of anyone else doing that. So they were still the songwriters, and they always will be. But while the band's functioning, yeah. Equal split, all money.
That's awesome.
Mm.
It's got to create, you know, a much more kind of conducive atmosphere for everyone in the group.
Yeah, definitely. It's just made it so much easier. There was never any tension over money.
Yeah, because you hear about that all the time. You know, the lead songwriter just living in luxury and the rest of the band's just slumming it.
Yeah.
And then the band breaks up, you know.
Well, we still are very much like a family, so it would be like treating your family terribly, essentially.
Yeah.
But they have every right to not share songwriting money.
And are you guys going to write more songs together?
Hopefully. I don't think we'd ever say never. We did write some songs last year.
Yep.
And went and recorded them in LA. But that was just like a more of a fun experience. There was no goal. It was like, let's go to the desert and have a holiday. And while we're there, of course we'll make some music.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was more along those lines.
Yeah,
so cool. We don't really have any plans for those songs or anything. But we probably will if we have time.
But you guys keep getting asked to come back and play big shows. Like,
yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. We're quite surprised because I think the kids that were like my children's age, they're 24 now. So to them it's nostalgic. So they're like, oh, this is my first album. I love this album so much. So yeah. It's kind of done a cycle where we've got new fans who are coming to check us out as a nostalgic act. And we're like, okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Like the first Homegrown we did after our 6-year gap or something, I can't remember, I was so nervous. I was like, no one's going to care about LMNOP right now. Like there was no, and it was just packed with 18-year-olds. Well, they looked 18 to me. I have no idea how they probably works out because they look about 24 now. And we were just shocked. They were like, compared to us, we felt like they were children, you know, like
yeah.
These teenagers, and they knew every word. And then I started asking them, like I tried to, like, what's going on here? So actually went out and talked to them, and they're like, oh, my dad, he had your album when I was 5, or, you know, my mum, it was her favourite album, so I grew up listening to LMNOP.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And one kid I talked to, he'd just turned 18, and he was like, oh, you know, I grew up listening to all the classics, like You Guys, Green Day, Blink-182.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, do you? And he's like, oh, yeah, I put you guys up there with Green Day and Blink-182.
Nice.
And he goes, but to me, you're better because you're Kiwi. So you're like, to me, I'm more proud of you guys. And I was like, oh, wow. So yeah. we have a future.
That's totally part of it, isn't it? Because LMNOP was such a Kiwi band. And it was almost like a, you know, like almost like a reflection of Kiwi culture and music. And I think that's part of the reason, well, it is obviously part of the reason why you guys were so successful and obviously continue to be, you know, because everyone in the country can relate to it in some way.
Mm. Don't get me wrong. We got a lot of hate as well. lot of hate.
Yeah. Well, what about that then? Because obviously with all the love comes the other side of it.
Yeah.
How was that?
Well, I was fortunate enough again to not be the songwriter. So, and I was quite young and a little bit naive. I didn't realize how much it might affect the songwriters. You know, I was just like, don't worry about them. Who cares? Look at, we just went triple platinum.
Yeah.
You know, who cares that some dickhead gave us a half star for an album? But, yeah. Now I feel a bit ridiculous about saying that because now I can look back, I'm like, man, that must have been quite painful to put your love, you know, put everything into the song and put your wear your heart on your sleeve and be so open and honest, and then someone go, this is the worst album I've ever heard in my life, you know, or it's just, I wish I'd been a bit more thoughtful in my comments back then, but I wasn't. I was just, because I was just like, fuck everybody, I don't give a shit. Yeah. I just didn't. I did not give a shit. But, you know, if someone spoke about my children's albums like that, I would be so distraught.
Yeah.
And also I quite like that I can look back on that and give younger bands, like, you know, I can just say, be pop, you're allowed to be pop, and don't give a shit about what any critics say, because who gives a shit? Fuck them. Who gives a shit? I really do not care what a critic has to say about music. And
yeah,
you should just do what you want to do. I don't really have much respect for critics.
Well, you definitely shouldn't be writing your music to please them anyway.
No. But you shouldn't care about reviews.
Yeah.
Especially if you make pop music, because you're setting yourself up to be hated.
Yeah, well, it's giving your music over to for critique from a probably biased party.
You
know, yeah. Saying, hey, here's everything that I've done. You've got a medium to just slam me if you want. Please Love Me. And that's not always going to happen, eh?
No.
What about what you are doing now, Delete Management?
I like that job because I get to work with young artists, which I find really inspiring. And just enjoy it. I like being around them.
So that probably leads into the girls' rock camp that you were involved with recently.
That was amazing. I didn't actually get to do too much of that because I have to work full time now, which is a new thing for me. It's only been a year, and I'm not very good at it, but I'm trying. I'm trying my hardest. So I couldn't actually be at the camp, annoyingly. So I helped with the build up and some of the organising, and helped put the girls into bands. So I can't call them girls, the campers. I helped put the campers into, even though it's called Girls Rock Camp.
Non-binary thing.
Yeah, yep. You actually have to refer to them as campers. So I helped put the campers into their bands and helped with the organising. And then I booked their lunchtime concerts. So I would disappear from work for a couple of hours and do the lunchtime concerts and got to hang out with the campers then.
What's the premise behind the camp, just for listeners who don't know?
So Girls Rock Camp was started in the States, can't remember which state right now, about 16 years ago. It's essentially a school holiday program for anyone who doesn't identify as a male, and it's based around music, but you learn a lot more than just... So you go there and you do like guitar lessons, bass lessons, whatever it is, and then in the afternoon you have band practice and you write a song. And by the end of the week, you've made a little video and you do a concert. And it's amazing to watch these campers come along on day one. They're very shy. Some of them are only 11.
Wow.
And some of them are 17. And so the difference between an 11-year-old and a 17-year-old is quite dramatic.
Yeah.
But by the end of the week, they just love each other. And they all come from different walks of life, all come from all over the country. And they don't know anyone else. And it's just a good way for the campers to learn about working with other people. And it's really empowering for some reason to get on a stage and perform. And some of them, it might be the only time they ever do it in their whole life. And they'll be like, oh, when I was 13, I did this camp. And, you know, and that gives some of them a chance to stand out when they might not at school. There's just so much comes from it. But yeah. It's mostly about empowering young, non-male identifying. This is so hard for me because I didn't grow up with this language.
Yeah, me neither.
So I'm still coming to terms with it and trying to learn it. And it's not because I don't want to. It's just... 40 years of saying she or he.
Yeah.
Your Girls Rock Camp's amazing. I wish I could have done it. I would have just loved that.
Yeah.
I was in a band anyway, so I had it every week. But
for kids that don't like, my wife Ruth was a tutor for the camp, and she talks about it super fondly. And the transformation that some of these kids went through that Ruth's talked about, you know, as you said, day one, super shy, won't come out of their shell, and then the last day they're on stage performing, sometimes with an instrument that they've only been learning for the last week. It's awesome, and I wish I had something like that when I was 11.
Yeah, one of the cat who runs it, she bumped into a group of the girls at an event, and they were there as a group, and that was the coolest thing that came out of it, I thought, was that months later she bumped into them. They're all from different schools. And they're like, oh, yeah, this is our friend. We're friends now. This is my friend group.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, and that's so awesome because if you don't meet anyone like that at school that's like you, then school's terrible.
Yeah.
But if you've got a little gang, you know, that's your group, and you've got someone that thinks like you do, then life's easier and it's so nice. And, you know, you don't have to struggle by feeling different or anything.
Man, you just wonder of what they're going to do with that inspiration that they've gained and just building on it. If you were to give maybe some advice to people playing in bands and looking to get themselves heard or make music kind of a big part of their life, what would you say to someone looking to kind of get in front of people?
I would say go out there and play. And that's not that easy because there's hardly any venues. But think of different ways of playing, play at parties, meet other musicians. That's the one thing I notice. I don't feel like there's, there will be. I'm not aware of all of them, obviously, but I feel like a lot of the artists I'm around don't have like their little scenes anymore. Like we had such a punk scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that's missing now. And it's not about them crossing over genres. It's like, I feel like they're just not going out and playing and asking to play. And
I grew up in Hamilton, and we had a few really strong scenes.
Yeah, you definitely did.
I've moved back to Raglan, and so we're close enough, and so I go to Hamilton every now and then, and I keep an eye on the shows. And there's, you know, Navara Lounge, and doesn't seem to be many little scenes going on.
No, I feel like the biggest scene that I see around is my punk scene that I used to be in. They're still playing in bands and still playing.
Yeah.
And they're still, like, that's the only scene that I can see.
Yeah.
Oh, there's, like, a folk scene, I assume, because it looks like there is. Also, younger people don't listen to angry music either. Like, we had a lot of angry music.
Mm.
I guess they do listen to hip-hop if they're going to listen to angry music, and maybe I just don't surround myself with people who love hip-hop, except for mainstream hip-hop, you know?
Yeah.
But, so that's the other thing, is maybe the kind of angsty side of youth creates a scene, whereas youth might not be as angry anymore and they don't need it as such.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe some of that angst is gone. We're too connected and too distracted to be angry.
Yeah, yeah.
Although there was SmackDown was last weekend, Hamtown SmackDown.
So yeah. I made a joke when that someone said that. They were like, yeah, but that's the same scene.
Yeah, yeah. I saw pictures of the same dudes that played the first SmackDowns and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's the exact scene I was talking about. You know, like that's still happening.
Yeah.
But I feel like surely there must be something going on. Maybe we're just not aware.
Yeah, yeah. I probably wouldn't be aware.
Nah, I probably wouldn't be. So... yeah, just play and play and play and play with everybody and anybody, and then this world will open up. This is so different to what I might have said a few years ago, but now, like, really practice your live show and make sure that you can do what you make in your bedroom on a stage, if that's what your plan is. And really think about it when you're writing your songs. If you do want to play it live, how are you going to play it? Mm. Because there's only so many people that can get away with pushing play on a laptop. If you want to be a band and, you know, like really learn how to do it properly, or not, if that's your vibe, but, you know, how do I put it? I just reckon play, and that's so different to what I would have said a few years ago, but just really get good at your craft, whatever genre, whatever style it is, just get good at it. And then stuff will happen. If you make something happen, if you do stuff, more stuff will happen. And don't get disheartened, and enjoy yourself. And take risks, that's the other thing. I find myself taking risks on behalf of bands lately, and I wish I'd done it when I was younger. I'll just go, oh yeah, I've got a band that'll do that. You know, and now they're going to Melbourne to play a show, just because I said, yep, I'll do that. It's not even my band. I just, just taking risks and get out there, meet people. Talk to people.
And that's all for this week. Thank you so much to my guest, Lani Perkis. Check out LMNOP at facebook.com/wearelmnop. And check out her new project, Delete Delete, at facebook.com/deletedeleteband. If you're interested in the Girls Rock Camp, go to girlsrockcampalliance.org. Lani's choice for Artist of the Week is Carb on Carb and their album Four Ages. Check them out at facebook.com/carbonCarb and carbonCarb.bandcamp.com. As always, you'll find all the links mentioned in the podcast episode notes. Also, make sure to go to the Musicians Map Facebook page at facebook.com/musiciansmap and hit like. This podcast and the website musiciansmap.org is dedicated to sharing knowledge and advice about music and the music industry. It's all about community, honesty, and positive progress. The experiences, stories, and advice shared on the podcast are given freely with the hope that you can relate to them and benefit from them. If you've found this podcast enjoyable or useful, make sure to check out the Musician's Map ebook and audiobook about building success in music. You'll find it at musiciansmap.org/books, Amazon, and Audible. And buying a copy of the book directly contributes to the continuation of this podcast. There's also a free ebook, How to Get Your Music Heard. Go to musiciansmap.org/free-book to get your copy. If you have a suggestion for the podcast or for the YouTube channel, or you just want to get in touch and say hello, please do so via the Musicians Map Facebook group or by email at kane@musiciansmap.org. Thanks for listening and stay positive.